talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer again with you.
Good morning, it is May 16th, and this is the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Lynn Venhouse.
Lynn Venhouse is sitting in because Michelle isn't here. Where's Michelle? Did she go to Branson again?
That's right. They can't stay away from the Yakov Smirnoff theater there.
And Wade Newton. But we've had Lynn on before. Lynn is our favorite to fill in. And
thank
Lynn
you,
reviews
Chris.
Movies over at the Belleville News Democrat.
Yes, and then once a week, the Webster Kirkwood Times, South County Times, and then also Friday nights at 6:10 on Y98 with Paul Cook.
Yeah, I got to hear that this past Friday night. I forgot to tell you that. Yes. I got to home from work early, and I was able to stream that, and you talked about a film we're going to be talking about quite a bit here.
That's
but
right.
It was very very entertaining. Boy, it goes by, you know, that minute and a half.
Yes. And
barely.
Then Paul adds, he adds clips, which is really nice, but he's a hoot, as you know, because he loves you guys.
Oh, okay, well, Lynn's very busy. And you know what else Lynn is? Lynn is a member of next week's second place finishing team over at Cinema St. Louis's We Love Trivia. We Love Movies Trivia Contest.
Oh, this is
well,
a,
you know,
that's a week from Friday.
The first place team is always ready to be toppled by the underdogs. We're the also Rans.
You think you're the underdog? Though. I don't know. You got Renee Hirschfeld. She's your secret weapon over there.
I know, and she's I have two supreme high school film teachers that are fantastic.
Well, it's always good to have a worthy opponent. It makes the whole thing a lot more interesting.
Oh, yeah.
We've been to trivia nights where our team is, you know, scores in the 90s by the end of the night, and the second place is in the 50s or 60s. So it's much better to have a, you know, close competition.
Yeah. But we're still not remotely worried.
Yeah. Well, it's fun, and also Chris Clark and Cliff Freilich and Brian Spath, they like that we have this rivalry. Because then, you know, it adds more to it. But yeah, they can use more teams, so sign up at cinemastlouis.org.
Yeah, John Tucci writes the questions, and he does a really, really good job. Although, I mean, last year he was like punching himself in the head because we got 98. He goes, I thought I made him hard this year. He was so upset with himself.
Yeah, that's the wild card, you know, what category
is
there for.
I know, I think we were 96, so, you know, it's one of those things.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what their standalone competition will be. It's been interesting the last few years. They have a little thing in between, what is between the fifth and sixth rounds or whatever, where it's 20 questions on one subject for
individuals. I won that a couple of years ago, and it was rock. You know, ironically, I don't think I like rock and roll movies, but I won that one because I knew, oh, it was like, name the band that this movie's about.
Yeah, and of course, I won a few years back with, I guess, Vincent Price.
That's right.
About 5 years ago.
I always like to see the categories because they always have actors and then they have themes.
Yeah.
And directors occasionally, you know.
Yeah, Scorsese and I can't remember. But
I think it's Spike Lee last year.
Yeah, Alfred Hitchcock.
All right. So that is May 27th, a week from Friday. That'll be interesting. We can talk about that, I guess, when we're back in the next week.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get going with this top 12 at the box office. Oh, I have to do this because Michelle's not here. Michelle makes this look easy.
Yes, as well, you know, but it was all Ratchet and Clank this weekend. That's for certain.
It was if you start at number 12.
That's right.
I should go backwards. Mix it up a little?
Yeah.
Let's do that.
That'd be
fine.
Let's do a Casey Kasem here.
There we go.
Start
counting down the top 12. Number 12 was indeed Ratchet and Clank. Anybody seen Ratchet and Clank in this room?
No. I don't know if I could take it. I think I'd have to be heavily sedated before I see that.
Well, it made
inebriated.
$0.6 million. Number 11 was Sing Street. We've all seen that in this room.
We've all liked it.
Was that in the top 12 last week?
Yeah. I don't know. I thought it was. Maybe it expanded this week, which it well deserves. I don't know if it's expanded here in town. It's still at the high point in Frontenac. Yeah, it's deserving of more exposure.
It might be around. Ronnie's 20 has been playing some, you know, indie art house things.
Yeah.
The beauty of that film is it's going to be word of mouth, just like his previous movies, you know, Once and Begin Again. They had to grow by word of mouth.
Well, I think you agree with me, Lynn, it's a shoe-in for one of the best song nominations at the end of the year.
Oh, yes, Adam Levine is back.
Yeah, well, I think either, there's two great, great songs in it. I think it's Brown Shoes and Drive It Like You Stole It.
Oh, yes.
And I think they're great, little toe-tappers, as they say. So, we'll be hearing more about that at the end of the year.
All right, Sing Street, which Jim reviewed and gave 5 out of 5 stars. Number 11, number 10 was The Boss. Melissa McCarthy's The Boss.
Hanging tight.
I
in
saw
there.
That.
Yeah,
number 9.
Surprised.
Oh, that made 1.2 million. See, I'm not so good at this. Barbershop, The Next Cut was number 9. That made 1.7 million.
Still hanging tough.
Jim loved that. Number 8 was.
Jim thought it was okay.
Okay. Number 8 was Keanu, which we reviewed a couple of weeks ago. I didn't really care for it. That was 1.9. Did you like Keanu, Liam?
I missed it.
Oh, you missed
but
it.
I'm a fan of Key and Peele. However, I was told that it's just a niche audience.
Yeah, well, you're a fan of kittens.
That's right.
Who don't love the kitties?
I don't, and they don't like me.
I'm allergic.
That's why there, you got two of them.
There
huh?
you go. Well, they, I know, and they can't stand me. Number 7 was The Huntsman's Winter's War from Universal. That made a whopping $2.6 million.
It's the rash that won't go away.
Number number 6 was Zootopia.
Oh, wonderful. Just wonderful.
Number $2.8 million. This Disney movie now has a global take of $969 million. So they
Holy
say.
Cats. And bunnies and foxes.
And girl power,
there
too.
You go.
Yes, yes, an entertaining film. But speak about a rash that will go away. Number 5.
Number 5 is Mother's Day, $3.3 million. I reviewed that at Weird Movie Geeks. What did I give it, 1 star?
Oh,
1.5
so you
maybe.
Were generous. Yeah, did you have to endure that, Lynn?
No, I did not. I did not like Valentine's Day nor New Year's Day, and I figured it was going to be the same thing.
It's maybe even worse.
Gary Marshall.
A better Mother's Day movie is The Meddler.
Yes, we. I think I talked about that a couple of weeks
that is
ago.
Nowhere on this top 12 list.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of ads and commercials for it, so I hope it's fairly wide. I don't know
it's
how
over
many
at
theaters.
The High Point on the big screen.
Yeah, how many theaters have it here in town, but it's certainly vastly superior to Mother's Day.
And great cast.
A very, very good cast.
But, you know, it's one of those that's going to grow on DVD because it's got that middle-aged audience.
So that was Mother's Day, made 3.3. Number 4 was The Darkness. That was the new horror movie that we were supposed to review today, but none of us have seen it. That was at a whopping 0% over on the Rotten Tomatoes. That's Kevin Bacon and Roda Mitchell. It's rated PG-13.
Yeah, you said there was about 20 or 25 reviews. Yeah, so it's not one of those, you know, 2 or 3 review things.
No, it's all negative all the time. I
think they bring something back from their Grand Canyon vacation.
And it looks like handprints. That's the big... scary.
Roda Mitchell, you say, and Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I was gonna both should know better.
We're seeing screenings tonight and tomorrow night over at Ronnie's, so I was thinking about sneaking in and seeing it afterwards, but it doesn't start till 9:50, and I'm not going to stick around for an hour.
Yeah. Well, I might sneak in. I could go in to see a little bit of another film that I really love for a few minutes and then go over to that. And we'll talk about that movie.
I don't know if Huntsman's still showing at the Ronnie's. All right.
That ain't that.
Number 3, let's move on. Number 3 is Money Monster, which I reviewed at WeirdMovieGeeks.com, and I gave, what did I give it? I gave it 2 out of 5. It's not very good. We'll talk about it here in a minute. $15 million, though. That's actually pretty decent. I would have expected it to make less than that.
Yeah, for a non-blockbuster action thing, you know. So, not bad. I think some reviewer call it a B-movie with an A-list cast.
Oh, yeah. I think it's the cast that probably helped it make as much as it did. Don't underestimate star power.
And, Jillian and George are out promoting the heck out of it as their
Jody.
Oh,
you saw that. Yeah.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, so
yes.
You'll be able to
join it for the Kirkwood Webster Times, or was that Kent?
Ken did it for the Webster Kirkwood Times. I did the Meddler for the Times.
Ken liked it.
Yes, he did. I gave it 2.5 out of 4 stars in the News Democrat. Yes.
And you talked about it with Paul.
Yes.
Friday,
You liked it.
Good, not great.
I say bad, not good.
I say even pretty.
But we'll go into a little. We'll duke that out here in a little bit. Number 2 is Jungle Book, which took in $17.8 million. Now has a worldwide total of $828 million.
Holy!
It's probably going to make $1 billion when all is said and done.
No kidding. Well, I tell you, the Disney's got 3 on this top 12 list. That's very, very impressive.
Yeah.
Well, it's good for families, and it's beautifully done.
Yes.
And
I like it. It's a very good movie.
Yeah, it's very, very well done. I had some trepidation, you know, being that everything is pretty much CGI in it, but it's darn near seamless. And, even though that the animals are talking, and, of course, they can't do that, but still, it's very compelling. The voice work is really good, too.
Oh, yes. It's not Marlon Perkins in the Wild Kingdom. They're not real.
That's right.
Marlon Perkins is from St. Louis, you know.
Yes, I know.
On the Walk of Fame.
Yeah. All right. And then number 1, drum roll, please. Here we go. It was Surprise, surprise, surprise. Captain America Civil War made $72.6 million, which is $100 million less than it made last weekend. But that's still a lot of money.
That's, wow. Yeah, that's really impressive. Is, yeah, really.
Let's
yeah.
see. It's surpassed the $940 million mark and has assured its eventual place in the $1 billion club.
Yes, yes. Now, you know, I've made a point of just noting the differences between DC movies and Marvel movies. And I think I mentioned last week a little theory was going around that that Captain America would have done even more last weekend if Batman v Superman wasn't so aggressively mediocre that was actually hurting. And I think that theory is bunk now. I think the second weekend proves it. Plus the fact, well, you notice that in the top 12, or not in the top 12, was Batman v Superman. This is the first time it's been off the top 12 since its release in March 25th. And I was looking at the totals. Now, Cap, worldwide and domestic, I think, is close to $900 million already. And the total so far of Batman v Superman globally is $868 million. So, which seems like a tremendous, tremendous success. Mm-hmm. But Warners must be looking at those Marvel numbers and going, and yeah. What do we do wrong?
Yeah. Well, they didn't have any humor in that movie.
I think, well, you know, we can give a little bit of a spoiler for Cap, since I think everyone has seen it. But I find it interesting that the last shot in Batman v Superman is a coffin lid, and the last shot of Captain America Civil War before the end credits start is Steve Rogers smiling at you.
There you go.
And I think that... Yes, a very upbeat note.
Okay.
So the Warner's guys are going, what are we doing wrong? Yeah. And it's like, what aren't you doing wrong?
On a side note, Michelle wrote down some side notes for me.
Oh,
Sony's
yes.
The Angry Birds is off to a great start with $43 million in 74 markets a week ahead of its U.S. launch. The Angry Birds is directed by Fergal Riley and Clay Catus and is set on an island with a population of flightless birds. The story centers on Red, who has a serious temper, and the mysterious arrival of green pigs. I hate when that happens. Now, we can review Angry Birds, except anybody see it? No.
You didn't see it, did you, Lynn?
No, I did not.
There was a screening Saturday morning. I was supposed to go to that, and then my daughter had a lacrosse game scheduled, so I couldn't go, so I assigned Dane Marty. He is one of our contributing movie reviewers. So Dane saw it, and I look for his review Thursday night at We Are Movie Geeks.
I didn't play the app. Do you guys play the app?
No.
I don't play apps.
Yeah. You know, as I was gonna say, was that lacrosse game outside, Tom?
Well, what happened was, then they ended up postponing the lacrosse game. They moved it to the afternoon because they wanted the field to dry. So I could have gone, but by that time, Dane had committed. So I took my mother-in-law to see Showboat over at the High Point. That
yes.
was part of the classic film series. Everything Showboat.
Yes, I have.
Have you seen the MGM version, or seen the other versions also?
I've seen the other versions.
The James Whale version.
Yes.
Yeah, I had never seen this version. I enjoyed it enough. There was like three long sequences where Marge and Gower Champion dance. I mean, it was obviously must have been hot stuff in 1951, because they don't dance to songs. They just dance to music, and these scenes just go on and on. These dance sequences.
That was a big thing in the musicals of the late 40s and early 50s, the dance sequence.
American Paris ends with like a 17-minute dance number, doesn't it?
Right. By the way, I was at the Fox season preview yesterday, and American in Paris, the musical, is coming to the Fox next year. And they gave out yesterday little butter cookies in the shape of Eiffel Towers.
Very nice. So, yeah. was there a good sized crowd at the?
There was pretty many people there. I was the youngest person in the audience. I took my 85-year-old. You know, my 85-year-old mother in law has Alzheimer's, and she can't remember, you know, where the bathroom is, but she remembers all the lyrics to the Showboat song. So she was over there mouthing the lyrics. So that's a odd disease. Also, Marge Champion is still alive. Did you know that? She's 96.
Now she was the. I think she was the model for Snow White, or one of the models, wasn't she?
I don't know. Possibly.
Yeah, I think.
A pretty famous dancer.
A young teenage girl.
Yeah.
Gower Champion died the night that one of his big shows opened. It was very tragic.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think they actually have footage of that. They had doing the curtain calls of the fellow coming out to announce that he had passed away that day, and I don't think the cast do. So you can see them almost fainting. And
poor Marge.
Yeah.
But, you know, Marge Marge married director Boris Sagal, who directed The Omega Man. He got his head cut off by a helicopter on the set of World War III.
Isn't he the father of Katie Sagal?
That's right. Yeah, but she's not. But yeah,
she's their stepmother, I guess.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
He stepped out of the helicopter and walked the wrong way right into the rear rotor.
Well, this is, I know this is off topic, but I got to hold the Tony Award yesterday. I've never held a real award before like that, and it's very heavy. They had it over at the Fox because the Fox Theatricals won the Tony for Best Musical last year. So they had it, and you could get your picture taken with it.
So did you, have you held an Oscar?
No.
I held an Oscar down at the City Museum. They had that was during Oscar week.
And how heavy was that, Tom?
8 pounds. The same as a human head or a gallon of milk. You know, by the way, William Warfield was the black baritone who sang Old Man River in Showboat. We couldn't think of his name last week.
Oh, fantastic.
He apparently didn't make a whole lot of films, but yeah, everybody applauded when he sung Old Man River. And then, like, 5 minutes later, he sings it again. He actually sings it 3 times during the course of the show, but he sings it right before the closing credits. Too.
There was a guy from the Fifth Dimension that sang it at the last time it was at the Muni.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I'm wondering, did we ever find out who was singing for Ava Gardner?
It wasn't Marnie Nixon. I did look it up, and I can't remember her name. But this is weird. On the soundtrack LP for that film, Ava Gardner sings those songs.
No kidding.
Yeah, but in the film, a different singer.
Yeah, I guess there's a couple of bonus extras on like the My Fair Lady DVD where you can hear Audrey Hepburn actually singing "Wouldn't It Be Lovely," and then when the film was released, it was Marty Nixon.
Yes.
And she also sang for Natalie Wood in West Side Story.
That's right. And King and I too, didn't she?
Yeah, for Deborah Carr. I think Deborah Carr sort of brought her out of the closet per se. That said, "This is the woman that's doing the songs, and you should know about it. The studio doesn't want you to know, but I'm going to tell you."
So I spent the weekend seeing old movies. Friday night I saw The Good Earth over at Webster University.
Have a good crowd for that?
No. And they showed it Saturday night and Sunday night.
Oh, my goodness.
I wonder, was there a reason?
Well, they're doing a thing at Webster U on great cinematography, and The Good Earth won Best Cinematography in 1937, in addition to Best Actress. But the thing is, they showed a DVD. They didn't even show a high-def Blu-ray or anything. So it didn't really look that great. You know, I mean, it's a great movie. I had never seen another big screen before. And Showboat was also a DVD. Oh. And that's that 90-foot throw over there at the high point. But nobody seemed to notice. I mean, like I said, I was the youngest person there, so I just enjoyed it.
Now, I know that you did the midnight shows this week.
I did, and then Saturday night, I actually saw Friday the 13th, the final chapter of that. So I saw 3 old movies over the weekend.
You didn't go to The Conjuring, the free screening at the Lincoln?
No, I'm not going to go. I've never been to the Lincoln. I'm sure you have.
Oh, yes, and it's haunted, so that's why they had it there.
That was free. But,
so did Andy get a good crowd Saturday night?
He got a huge crowd Friday night, 170.
Oh, my goodness.
And that,
that's a new
record. I was actually there Friday night hanging out for a little bit, and then I ran over to Tivoli to introduce the midnight show over there, which had a tiny crowd. That was Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Maybe 15 people showed up for that. I should have just stuck around at the moolah. And then Saturday night when I went back, his crowd wasn't nearly that big. Maybe 60 or 70 or 50. But... you know, Friday was Friday 13th, so people wanted to go see Friday 13th.
So you stayed for the film itself. How's it holding up?
It's okay. Those Friday 13th movies all sort of blend together. Lynn, what's your favorite Friday the 13th movie?
The one that the guy from Belleville was connected with, that John Carl Beekler. He did the special effects. Yeah. I think it was the 7th. Yes, wasn't it the 7th one?
Possibly. I don't know.
One is pretty good.
Yeah, didn't he direct one?
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah. John Beekler's been around. I remember he did some stuff in the 70s, some local films. The Thing in the Basement, which was directed by Dick Taylor, who did Stingray, which was filmed over there, too.
I don't like the idiotic teenagers running through the woods without any clothes and just, you know, it's just really...
Well, without the clothes part doesn't really bother me, though. But they're not very creative. But, you know, people enjoy them, and all the... Friday 13th movies played theatrically, and
that's true. It didn't go the route of Hellraiser. Yeah, you know, some of them go straight to video. But now, I think all the Freddies played theatrically too.
All right. Well, let's start reviewing some movies. Doggone it.
Yeah.
And let's start with The Man Who Knew Infinity.
Don't be intimidated. Great knowledge comes from the humblest of origins.
I'm here to publish. The letter only contained a small sampling of my discoveries.
This will take a lifetime.
Maybe two.
Stars who? Dev Patel and Jeremy Irons.
Yeah, Jeremy Irons.
You guys both saw it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Kate Marquis reviewed it for We Are Movie Geeks and gave it a very positive review. Jim, what'd you think of The Man Who Knew Infinity?
Oh, it's a very well done film. It just, you know, reeks of quality from start to finish. I was going to mention it also has the great Toby Jones in a supporting role. He's always terrific.
He is, and he needs to do more movies. He's so delightful on screen.
And Jeremy Northam playing Bertram Russell.
Yes, who is kind of lively, actually, in it.
Just to sum it up quickly, it's all set close to the turn of the century. It's around 1914, I think, is when it actually starts. And it's the reminiscence of G.H. Hardy, a mathematician at Cambridge, who is played by Jeremy Irons. And he's thinking back to his relationship with an Indian fellow, played by Dev Patel, let's see if I get that right. Ramajan
is Srinivasa. Srinivasa Ramajan.
Yes, yes.
Ooh, you guys are good.
Yeah.
I practiced.
I would have tripping over that right and left. But he's a prodigy. He spends his time before coming to Cambridge writing in chalk these mathematical equations. He's fascinated by it, but he can't seem to get anywhere with it because he doesn't have the proper schooling. And I think he finally is working for a place. I'm forgetting. I'm blanking on the name of the actor, British actor that runs the place where he works finally.
Right.
Stephen Fry.
Yes. He works as a lowly accounting clerk in a firm, and he is from the slums of India. And
they
bring him to Cambridge, and he's not an it's all about racism and academia and how snooty they are and how they don't want to believe this self-taught guy can know these theories. He has really original theorems. And one of the running jokes, if you're a mathematician, is the 1729. There's a theory there, and it's above me to figure this stuff out. But basically, it's kind of like a Beautiful Mind, the imitation of the imitation game, the theory of everything. It's about the genius that's on the outside.
Yeah, well, the thing is that Jeremy Irons' character is pushing him. He's, Dev Patel's character believes he gets these equations from God, but Jeremy Irons, whose character is an atheist, he said, no, you need to write out the formulas. We need to have proofs on it. And finally gets him to commit to this, and it's kind of a struggle in that. Plus, around 1914, guess what was happening soon? World War I. And some of the sequences when the Cambridge is kind of taken over as a relief area kind of reminded me of This Is Our Youth from last year. That was the movie with
Alicia Vikander.
Alicia Vikander, right. Yeah, and there's even a Zeppelin attack at one time on Cambridge.
And Dominic West played her father in that movie, and he's co-stars in Money Monster.
That's true.
This is a rather low-budget film, and so they do have the Zeppelin shot, but there's not much action. But the big heartbreak is there's soap opera elements. He has a very possessive mother. He has a beautiful wife, and the mother is at odds with the beautiful wife, so you have that whole subplot.
Yeah, she's withholding letters from each of them. Yeah,
right, but also he neglects his health, so he gets TB, and it's very tragic because he's vegetarian, and at Cambridge, he has a hard time finding things for his vegetarian diet, especially when they're rationing for the war, so he gets really sick.
Well, you know when a character in a movie starts to cough, he's going to be gone by the end credits.
Yes, and then once you see the blood on the handkerchief, that's it.
That's subtle. All right, so you guys like it?
Yeah, it's masterpiece theater stuff. It's BBC America stuff. Right. But it's, I think people like that sort of thing.
Did you review that for the Belleville News Democrat?
I did not. Okay. It's just beautifully done. But Dev Patel is very appealing. Right. Slumdog Millionaire. And I think he holds it together. But it's nice to see Jeremy Irons.
Oh, Jeremy's been busy this year. This is his third movie out this year after Race and Batman v Superman. So it's always great to see him on screen. Terrific actor.
Well, good. All right. So Jim and Lynn both recommend The Man Who Knew Infinity. And they also saw, Jim and Lynn, A Bigger Splash.
You're obscene.
We're all obscene. Everyone's obscene. That's the whole point.
Ralph Fiennes.
And Tilda Swinton.
Or like a bigger dress.
And Matthias Schoenaerts and the very bland Dakota Johnson.
But does she get naked?
She does.
Everybody gets naked.
I'm there.
All right, I don't know if you want to see Ralph Fiennes naked, though. Yeah, that's something I could have done without.
Yeah. Or him dancing to the Rolling Stones. It's
what's this
really
one about? What's this
that's
one about?
I don't recommend this at all.
What's it about? What's it about?
It's junk. I guess it's set in modern times, and Tilda Swinton is an androgynous superstar rock singer.
Yeah, that's a real stretch for her.
Well, you know, she's kind of like the vampire character she played in that movie a few years ago for Jim Jarmusch. She is vacationing off the coast of Italy with Matthew Scheinhardt, and she has, I guess, undergone some sort of throat surgery, so she's sort of either whispering or just doing hand gestures through most of it, and it's kind of ridiculous. And their idyllic vacation is disrupted by her old, manager at the time or something?
Yeah, Ralph Fiennes plays this hotshot rock manager, and he is either her ex-lover or ex-husband. It's never quite clear what they are, but they're exes. And he brings his newly found daughter with him, who, of course, Dakota Johnson's got to play the sultry temptress.
In full Lolita-type wardrobes.
She's good at that, though.
With blonde hair. And she immediately announces when she meets him, I'm 22. I want to do a spoiler here. The big reveal at the end is that she's actually 17. And I almost wanted to hoot at the screen. I was like, come on, she's never seeing 25 again, obviously. Come on, that's ridiculous.
Well, it takes a long time of they're at the, you know, because they're on an island, they're having this beautiful vacation, and not much happens. They eat good food, and they argue, and they listen to music.
And drink
a lot. And then, of course, there's all this sexual tension, and that leads to bad things.
So is it as bad as 50 Shades of Grey?
Really?
Nothing is as bad as 50 Shades of Grey.
Well, you know, I know that you have some affection for By the Sea, but this is much worse. So this a similar plot. There were two couples in By the Sea, but you know, this is a foursome, and there's a little bit of a sort of a murder mystery it turns into, you know, about two thirds of the way through it, and I was so bored. I was like, oh no, my gosh! When the story took this turn, I was like, oh, this is going to be another half hour at least. I can't take this.
It's interminable, and it has this really obnoxious soundtrack that's obtrusive, and it's swelling violins and crashing sounds, and it's really bizarre.
And all the locals there are just fascinated by these foreigners. There's a scene where they're singing karaoke, and the whole village comes out to see the characters, you know, well, Dakota Johnson and Ralph Fiennes, you know, clutching at each other while they're singing some sexy old rock and roll standard, and it's just so ridiculous. Yeah,
and apparently Ralph Fiennes had worked on a Rolling Stones album.
His character had.
It sounds pretty bad. So Lynn and Jim do not recommend a bigger splash, which is unlikely to make a big splash at the box office. Let's move on. Money Monster. I reviewed Money Monster over at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. I gave it 2 out of 5 stars. Money Monster stars George Clooney and Julia Roberts and Jack O'Connell, and is directed by the 2-time Oscar-winning actress Jodie Foster, who does not have a good track record of directing movies, and this one's no exception.
Name is Lee Gates. The show is Money Monster.
Who's that guy?
He's looking.
On camera, too.
Without risk, there is no reward.
You're lying!
Oh, Jesus!
Cut the feed.
Turn those cameras back on!
What do you want me to do?
Turn them off! Pat it!
Put it up.
This is about a finance cable show hosted by George Clooney. What was his name? Do you remember?
Lee Gates.
He kind of acts like an idiot.
It's supposed to be like Jim Cramer.
Yeah,
but cranked up. Interminably.
He does this hip hop dancing with these dancing girls, and he wears these big bling necklaces and these silly hats, and acts kind of hyperactive. And
why anyone would take him seriously as an investment counselor? It's like, come on, that's one of the leaps in logic.
But apparently, somebody who did take him seriously was a character played by Jack O'Connell, who storms into on the set during a live broadcast with a gun and shoots the ceiling and gets everybody's attention, and then straps a bomb vest on to George Clooney. And he's apparently upset because he took George Clooney's advice and invested everything he owned into some bad investment and lost it all.
$60,000.
Yeah. That's, yeah, and he goes, this is over $60,000, which is a lot of money to the little guy, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's his life savings, his mother's inheritance to him. And all
so
that.
Julia Roberts is the producer of the show, and she's back in the control room, and she shuts all the cameras off, and then he says, you better turn those cameras back on, or I'm going to blow this guy up. So she turns the cameras back on, so you've got this live siege. The movie is told more or less in real time. I guess it was supposed to be real time.
Yeah.
Which I think
that
helped.
Works, yes,
and it's only 95 minutes, so it's not a dull film. I just didn't think it was very good.
Yeah, it kind of wants to be a Dog Day Afternoon Network with a little splash of The Big Short, and it's nowhere near any of those films, you know.
No, yeah. I think where it gets a little wobbly and preposterous towards the end.
Oh, the ending was ridiculous. They're going to let these two guys, one's got a bomb vest, the other has a gun, and they're going to let them parade down the streets of New York. First place, they would clear off the streets, but of course they don't clear off the streets. Everybody's like cheering them on. Oh, way to go, little guy. Show them
like
the bankers are so evil. It's just so it's so simple-minded.
Yeah, one guy runs out and says, blow him up, and I was like, you're 3 feet away from him.
But I don't even understand. And Dominic West plays this CEO, this corrupt CEO, has somehow pulled some kind of scam, which has caused Jack O'Connell to lose all his money. It's not, you know, it's not a big abstract picture about losing money. They have to pin it on some villain.
Just one guy instead of the whole system.
Right. But what, they were going to set up a meeting with this villain? They were going to let the police, were going to let this guy with a gun and a bomb vest go meet with this billionaire CEO? That made no sense. That guy would have got his bodyguards and gotten the heck out of there.
Well, that, you know, they have a magical sort of fantasy element in it, in that Julia Roberts' assistants are friends with these computer hackers, and these hackers can find anything within seconds, and they just call them on the phone, and they say, we'll be right on it, and then seconds later, they have incriminating video of this guy.
And she's in the control room, and she's, you know, directing the show, but she's also like, you know, Nancy
reporter.
Drew or something. She's solving the whole crime that the CEO did, you know, when she's not talking to George Clooney through his earpiece. It's just totally far-fetched, totally ridiculous. But like I say, though, it's not a dull film. It moves pretty quickly. It's one of these movies more when you think about it after you've left the theater that you start shaking your head. It's fairly entertaining while it's going, but it's really predictable.
It benefits because it's George Clooney and Julia Roberts together. This is their fourth pairing. They did the first two, Ocean's 11 and 12, and then they also did Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
Yeah.
And they're very good together. They have a nice chemistry.
Well, they're not together, though, if you think about it. They briefly interact in the very beginning when he's sitting on the toilet and then walks into his dressing room, and at the very end, I think they're eating ice cream or something. But they don't interact. And I think I read somewhere that they were never really on the set together except for like a half a day shooting to get those two shots. And that comes off. She doesn't seem like she's in the same building or in the same, you know, within the same action as George Clooney. That kind of bugged me. There's even a scene where she walks out of the control room and she's standing in the corner and she says, look at me. And he's looking at her. And the way that scene was shot, you could just tell that they weren't on the set together.
Yeah. I will say that I forgot to jot down her name, but the Irish actress that plays Dominic West, assistant. She's on the TV show Outlander, I believe.
Yes, I think it's Catrione.
Yes, that sounds right. But she's very good.
People love her.
She could have a career.
I singled out Emily Mead, who plays O'Connell's pregnant girlfriend, and that's really my favorite. Really, the only time in the movie that the movie I think went in a sort of a surprising direction is the scene where they drag her in, and you expect it to be like in Dog Day Afternoon, where they bring in Al Pacino's wife, or actually they brought in
Chris Sarandon is his
transvestite lover. But they bring her in, you expect her to sit there and plead with him and cry and say, oh, give yourself up, it's the right thing to do. But she doesn't. She goes off on him. She screams and cusses at him and tells him what a loser it is. It's a very, very funny scene.
Yeah,
she's really good.
She's a terrific young actress who's great in lousy movies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the one that I flash back to immediately was Thanks for Sharing. I don't know if you had to see that
one. I did see that, yeah.
Yeah, she was the gal that Mark Ruffalo's character unfortunately picks up, and when he tries to tell her to leave, she, you know, threatens to commit suicide in his place.
Oh, yeah.
And she, you know,
I hate when that happens.
Yeah, well, she goes off in a different direction than her character would. And she was also good in the very bad Men, Women, and Children. So she's a good actress.
That's,
I hope she can
Adam
find
Sandler?
A good script. Oh, yes.
I didn't see that.
Dreadful. But she was good in it.
Jennifer Garner.
Emily Mead is that actress.
Yeah, so be on the lookout for her in better things.
But Money Monster, it's not very good. George Clooney, you know, he's a great actor and usually picks better projects, but he plays the same character he's played in so many of his other films. Jack O'Connell, you know, he does this Brooklyn accent, which is okay. I said in my review it's consistent, but it's never really that convincing. Couldn't they find a Brooklyn-based actor to play that role?
Well, I also just think his character doesn't work very well at all, you know.
Yeah, it's all over the place, and you know, of course, well, you know, I think we mentioned we thought the trailer gave away everything,
yes.
And by gosh, it did just about does.
It's interesting the way the ultimate fate of Jack O'Connell's character at the very end, and that surprised me a little bit. I'm not sure why they went in that direction. That was a little.
Well, you know, there's going to be a big twist because they telegraph it, as you said, in the preview, and then also you just know by the time that this can't be all of it. Yeah,
right.
Davy versus Goliath.
Yeah, but you liked it, though. Would you give it
two and a half out of four?
That's pretty generous.
Positive. Well, man. I said good, not great.
So Lynn sort of liked Money Monster. Mm-hmm. Jim and I did not like it. Today, Jim is seeing The Lobster.
Have you ever been on your own before?
No, never.
Your last relationship lasted how many years?
12.
Sexual preference?
Women.
Any children?
No.
And the dog?
This is my brother. He was here a couple of years ago, but he didn't make it.
Indeed.
That stars Colin Farrell and John C. Reilly and Rachel Weisz.
It sounds pretty wacky.
The trailer looks amazing. It looks really,
now,
really
as good.
Futuristic.
As I understand, it's the people that don't express their feelings or aren't or don't fall in love or something like that, if they don't do it by a certain time, they turn into an animal.
Yeah, but I think it's a satire or a parable.
Oh, 45 days they have to mate up. Hook up.
All right, so that, and it won something at Cannes last year. It wasn't the Palme d'Or, but something.
Yeah, I think our buddy Michael saw it at Fantastic Fest a few years ago.
And we'll be reposting his review on Friday. Also tonight, we are seeing Nice Guys.
There's a couple of people I trust say you're pretty good at this. I want you to find Amelia.
I would have thought your job ended with breaking my fucking arm.
You're the guy who beat up my dad.
Hey, sucker punched your dad. Big difference.
Nice Guys stars Russell Crowe and
Ryan Gosling. And they've been on the talk show circuit.
Directed by Shane Black. I don't know, he wrote it too, I guess?
Yeah, he wrote it. Yeah. It looks like a movie he did a few years ago called Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which
I loved.
Oh, that was a great script.
He's the inventor of the buddy comedy of action film in Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
So he wrote that.
He wrote that first one.
So I expect good things from this because it's been a while. Plus, it looks awesome because it's a throwback to those 70s movies.
Yeah, it takes place in the 70s.
Right.
Yeah, it has that old Warner Brothers logo. Yeah. It's great.
I just hope it's really good. And also, it looks like it has a nice supporting cast as well.
Preview on Nice Guys at our site.
I think that's going to be me, probably.
Oh, okay. Yes. So look for Jim's review of Nice Guys Thursday night. Tomorrow night we're seeing Neighbors 2 Sorority Rising. Is that the entire title?
Yeah,
that's actually getting really good reviews over at the Tomatoes.
We're never going to sell our house with a sorority living next door. What are we going to do?
Maybe it's not that bad. Girls are usually quiet. They don't really take hard drugs. And they're much smarter.
It'll be interesting to see how they utilize. Yeah, I thought the hidden comic gem in the first Neighbors was Rose Byrne, and I hope she's got a really good part. But this might be interesting to see Chloe Moritz Grace in a comedy.
Right.
We've seen her in a lot of action stuff.
Oh, we love her.
She's kind of like a little scream queen.
Well,
she's been a lot of horror stuff.
She started out at age 6, and I didn't notice her till 500 Days of Summer, where she played Joseph Gordon-Levitt's sister. But then Kick-Ass is the movie that put her on the map. But she was fantastic
in Let Me In, and Dark Shadows and Carrie. She's been in a lot of fantasy and horror stuff.
And so she's very promising.
Yeah,
but what I like about it, and I have to wait to see it because I can't go tomorrow night, but I think that the sorority is next door, but it's not a typical sorority. It's like geek nerdy sorority.
Ah, okay.
But they party hard.
Kind of like in House Bunny.
Yes, indeed.
All right. So, well, who's reviewing that one? Do we know?
I think Michael is. Okay. I think he reviewed the first Neighbors,
so
he wants to do this one.
So look for Michael Havner's review of Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising, Thursday night. And then they're seeing something Wednesday with Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah,
that's
Love and Friendship. You seen that, Glenn?
I'm seeing it on Wednesday
afternoon. I don't know anything about that. What's that about?
It is a Jane Austen novella, and well, it's going to be exciting. Kate Beckinsale and Chloe Sevigny, or Sevigny, right. Or however. And I'm sorry, they play mother and daughter, and the mom wants to find herself a husband, but she
Kate
also
they're not mother and daughter though.
I can't imagine that. They've got to be close to the same age.
Now I read the piece in Entertainment Weekly. Beckinsale is the mother, and they mentioned the actress that plays her daughter. Friends.
Oh, they're friends. Okay, because I thought that was really odd. Yeah. I thought, why is that? But you know what? Whit Stillman directed it, and he directed The Last Days of Disco, which they were both in. Yeah. So it's a reuniting of Kate and Chloe.
That's right. They were best friends in The Last Days of Disco.
Right. And then he hasn't been around. He's just on, Metropolitan and Last Days of Disco in Barcelona. So he's a very...
Damsels in Distress, I think, was his a couple of years ago.
Was that?
I think so.
With Greta Gerwig.
Yeah. I'm going to have to miss out on that, it sounds like, unfortunately.
Oh, poor Sam.
Yeah. Right. So no corsets for me this week.
Okay, let's talk about some local things. I mentioned that I saw Friday the 13th, the final chapter.
Yeah. What's the next one, you know?
The next weekend is Lucio Fulci's Cat in the Brain, which is June 4th and 5th. This is actually the fifth Lucio Fulci movie that Andy has shown as part of the Late Night Grindhouse. He's shown Zombie, The Beyond, House by the Cemetery, and Gates of Hell. And all four of those movies I saw multiple times at the drive-in back in the late 70s and early 80s. Cat in the Brain never played theatrically. I know it never played theatrically in St. Louis. I'm not even sure it played theatrically in this country. It's one of the more obscure Lucio Fulci movies. It's also one of the goriest, which is saying quite a bit for old Fulci.
Is that 70s or 80s?
No, 1980. It stars Lucio Fulci, believe it or not. And he plays a director of gory horror films, a real stretch for him. And there's a lot of clips from his films, like the goriest parts of his films, especially the New York Ripper, which is just a repulsively gory film, make their way into this movie, Cat in the Brain, about a movie director going crazy. And there is literally a cat scraping at brain tissue in the trailer. So we'll see. I've seen Cat in the Brain like on DVD, like a grainy bootleg. I will actually be out of town that weekend, doggone it. That's Wonderfest. So I'm going to have to miss Cat in the Brain at the Moolah Friday and Saturday, June 4th and 5th. Lynn said she went to the Tennessee Williams thing. And did you go to the Stella shouting contest? A lot of people shouting Stella?
I did, and it was enjoyable. There was about a dozen. A guy named Digger won. And it was very fun. And Julius Hunter.
What was
Nancy
so great about his Stella shout?
He put in he got the drunken Stanley in there.
so he drank before he shouted?
It was a lot more acting. You know, some of them just had really good shouts, but he had the acting chops for it.
Do you have the ripped t-shirt for it?
No, only one guy wore a t-shirt, and he wore a black t-shirt. But the girl who played Stella, Julia Crump, she had on a beautiful slip. Cream-colored slip.
Oh, really? Because she's my Facebook friend. She's an attractive gal.
She is.
Is there a lot of people there watching?
Yes, there was. It was enjoyable. The whole thing was in Grand Center over the weekend, the Tennessee Williams Festival.
But that was at Faust Park, though, wasn't it?
This was in Strauss Park across from the Fox.
Oh, Strauss Park. I was thinking Faust Park.
No, it was... everything
Strauss
was
Park.
In
that makes more sense.
Yes, everything was in Grand Center except for the Wednesday Club, a place where they showed... Because that was where Tennessee Williams performed with the Mummers.
Yeah.
And so that was in Central West End, but everything else was... And it was just fantastic.
And they showed Streetcar Named Desire in a continuous loop. Was that over there, too?
Yes. You know that little section by the UMSL Media
Center? Yeah, by NPR.
Yeah, they always show the...
Yeah, they show...
The movies on the walls.
Yeah, that's where they were showing it?
Yes.
Did you walk over there and try to watch any of it?
I've seen it so many times.
I'm just wondering how it looked projected outdoors in the middle of the day. Was the weather nice on Saturday? Yeah, the weather was nice on Saturday.
Yeah.
Or was it Friday they did that?
They did it all weekend.
Did they? Did they show that over and over? I wonder how many people were standing out there watching it.
All weekend. I partook in quite a few of the events. One was in the Stockton House, which is behind Powell Hall, and who knew? And they had a one-act play in every room. It was It was called the Rooming House Plays. You'd be surprised how much St. Louis is mentioned in his early work because he did live here at the time. Mm-hmm. And so the plays all took place in each bedroom, one act. Hmm. And the actors acted them out, and then I saw another play at the Curtain Call Lounge, and that was two women from Memphis in St. Louis for a convention, and they wanted to be on the town, and it was set in the 20s, and it was really fun.
Hmm. Well, good.
Yes,
but this is We Are Movie Geeks, not We Are Theater Geeks, so stop talking about plays.
I know.
I'm just kidding. And then Friday night, we did the midnight show over at the Tivoli, which nobody showed up for. That was...
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
But this Friday, I think we're going to get a much bigger crowd.
Friday
and Saturday, because we're showing Sam Raimi's original The Evil Dead from 1982. What a classic. I love that movie.
It is a good one.
It's
and
terrifying.
Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, Stephen King, I remember, promoted that
That's
film
right.
when it first
That's
came
right.
out. It was the most ferociously original horror film he said he'd ever seen.
Yeah, and Sam Raimi was really young. He actually shot it in 79, didn't come out until 82, and he shot it with his buddies, Bruce Campbell and a few other people. And it's really held up really, really well. It's fantastic. I actually saw it once outside with the entire cast, including Bruce Campbell, over up in Chicago.
Oh, my goodness.
The girls of the Evil Dead travel to these horror movie conventions all the time, and Bruce Campbell does as well.
Yeah, I remember reading about Sam Raimi trying to get money to finish it, and he would set up his Super 8 projector like in the aisle of a supermarket, and after hours show it to the owner or manager or whatever, and try to get some money from them to invest in it.
Yeah, Something in the Woods, I think, was like a 15-minute short version of the film that he made on Super 8, and then he would show that to try to raise money for his feature.
Doesn't he have a car that's in every one of those?
Oh, yes, the classic.
All right, so that's The Evil Dead, Friday and Saturday night, and then the weekend after that is Pulp Fiction, and then we'll have a new schedule. Hopefully I'll get the schedule this week, and I'll put something at We Are Movie Geeks about the new midnight schedule. I know they're showing Fantastic Planet, which is a French animated film from early 70s.
Yeah, and when I was in college, that played midnight quite a bit in Chicago.
It was interesting.
Yeah, I remember seeing it at the old Kirkwood Cinema back when it was a new film. What else is going on locally, guys?
Well,
what's this 48-hour film project? That's something that Cinema St. Louis does. They got to make a movie in 2 days.
It's really fun. What they do is because my aspiring filmmaker son has done it, and I know people in it.
Oh, yeah.
But what it is Cinema St. Louis took over, so Kat Tushner, she's in charge of it. But they sign up, and then they show up on Friday night, and from a fishbowl or whatever, they pick out their genre. It could be mockumentary, musical, comedy, drama, the whole gamut of genre, horror. And they have to include three things in the movie that they shoot on the weekend. They'll have a line of dialogue that everybody has to include. They'll have a character's name that everybody has to include, and they'll have a prop that everybody has to include. And then they go to wherever and write it and shoot it on Saturday and edit it on Sunday, and they have to have it in by a certain time and no ifs, ands, or buts. Hmm. And if they miss it, that's it.
I wonder if people have actually not gotten there in time, showed up a half hour late. Here's my movie.
Yeah, there have been. But
how long do these films last?
They're not more than 8-10 minutes, something like that. And then they show them in the evening at the Tivoli.
Oh, yeah.
They have a couple days, and then they do a best of. They pick the top 10 and the winners. But they do award, best use of the line of dialogue, best acting, best... You know, they have all sorts of different awards. But it's really fun for aspiring filmmakers. It's pretty crazy having to do it in 48 hours.
All right. And then we mentioned the Cinema St. Louis I Love Movies Trivia Night. That's a week from Friday.
You're going down.
No way, baby. You're going down. I've assembled the winning team in the past 9 years in a row, except that one time I was out of town and I loaned Jim and Danny Young to you.
And
you guys won. And then you played on our team a couple years after
that. I did play on your team 3 years, and we did win first, and it was lovely. But hey, second and third, I've come in the last couple years, and it's okay, because
I wouldn't know.
Well, maybe you will. Maybe you will this year. We have Renee.
True. So we'll be reporting on that, I guess.
We're
in a couple
very
weeks.
Competitive trivia players.
That's right. All right, what else can we talk about? How about the death of William Shallard? He's one of those old actors that you think is going to be around forever.
Oh, he just was in everything.
Patty Duke's dad.
Our Patty loves to rock and roll. A hot dog makes her lose control.
Best known as Patty Duke's dad from the Patty Duke Show. But his movie career is pretty darn amazing.
Yes.
A lot of genre films. Yeah. I was surprised, you might have mentioned this actually, Tom, that he has a small role in Mighty Joe Young.
That's right. He was the gas station attendant near the end, where Mighty Joe Young is in the back of the truck.
That's like his second or third movie. Yeah. I think it's The Foxes of Harrow was his first film a couple of years before that. That was maybe 47 or something like that. But he was working right up to the end. He just passed away at age 93. But he was sort of part of Joe Dante's crew. He's in Twilight Zone and Matinee.
And Interspace.
He's a
small role in Gremlins.
Small role in Gremlins. But yeah, terrific actor. So 93. That's
He was also in The Jerk. He was the judge who sentenced Steve Martin. And he's wearing the Optigrab glasses and he's cross-eyed.
He's even got a small role in Singing in the Rain, for sakes.
Wow.
Unbelievable. By the way, the genre of fans know him from Man from Planet X. Actually, this past weekend on the Svengoolie show on MeTV, they ran Incredible Shrinking Man.
Oh, he's in there. Yeah.
And yeah, he's the main character's doctor that knows something is wrong with him. Something ain't right.
Hey, my wedding ring fell off. You're shrinking.
Well, I wanted to mention that on HBO this Saturday is the Bryan Cranston LBJ movie All the Way. He won the Tony for it, and they have adapted it. It won Best Play. And so he's going to play LBJ, and Anthony Mackie is going to play Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
It's the period right after JFK is assassinated, and he assumes the presidency, and he takes on the Civil Rights acts as his big cause, and it's
William Shallard in it.
All the maneuvering with all the politicians, the Southern politicians, and the civil rights activists, and it's very fascinating.
I'm sure it'll be a lot better than the play.
You never know.
Well, it looks really good because HBO does a fabulous job with those docudramas.
And Jim, there was a comic book artist that you were a big fan of, and he had a couple of movie connections, so we'll let you talk about him. What was his name?
Oh, Darwin Cook. This was a gut punch to the animation and comic book community this past weekend. It just came out of nowhere. Only 53 while Schaller was 93. And 53. We'd just gotten the notice that he was ill, and then all of a sudden he was gone. But I wanted to mention that he was mostly, before his comic book connections, was mostly known for animation, particularly the wonderful Superman and Batman animated shows. He actually designed the opening titles to Batman Beyond, but he really came into his own with the graphic novels. I would suggest anyone listening to look up The New Frontier, which became the basis of a direct-to-video film, Justice League, The New Frontier, which is available streaming, and you can purchase it. It's about the beginnings of the superheroes in the 50s. It's wonderful. He also did some great Catwoman graphic novels. Actually, his redesign of the character is still in use on the Gotham TV show. And he did a couple of standalone graphic novels based on the Parker character by Richard Stark. The Parker character was played by Jason Statham just a couple of years ago in a film. Prior to that, he was played by Mel Gibson in Payback, and then long before that, it was Lee Marvin in Point Blank. Mr. Cook did a wonderful adaptations of them. I tell you, I wish that the people and the heads of Warner Brothers feature films would look at his work and know this is the way to portray those characters. Someone remarked over the weekend, his superheroes always look like they were pleased and happy to have their powers. And just a wonderful artist, heck of a guy. I got to meet him a couple years ago, and it's a major, major talent that we're denied now. He's gone. So
all right, so yeah. R.I.P.
Darwin Cook.
And R.I.P. William Shallard. And we're going to have to R.I.P. the show here in about a minute. Anything else you guys want to plug real quick? We've got about a minute.
Come out to Grant's Farm and get a caricature.
Okay, that's right. See, there you go.
Yeah.
Plug away. Well, we'll be back.
Jersey Boys is at the Fox starting on Wednesday. Boys. And if you didn't care for the movie, you got to see the show live.
Oh, the movie's much better than the show.
And you would know, Tom, you've seen the stage version so many times.
I don't need to see the stage version. I've seen the movie.
No.
It's just like I don't need to read a book if I've seen the movie.
No.
All right, we're going to have to wrap this up. Next week, we will be back, though. I guess Michelle will be back from Branson next week. We'll review.
Yakov Smirnoff's show is pretty good. Yeah.
But Lynn, thanks for stopping by. You're always our favorite fill-in.
Well, thank you for having me. I always enjoy talking to you fellas.
Yeah, no problem. And we'll be back next week to review Nice Guys and Neighbor 2, Sorority Rising and Lobster, and maybe a couple of other films. But for now, I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Lynn Venhouse.
And be sure to listen again next week.
Black leather, ta-ta-ta. Black leather. Oh, naughty state. Hello, darling. Hey, 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 hey. Black leather, black leather. top. Black leather, black.